Good day, everyone, and welcome to the RFA RINs Study Teleconference. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ann O'Neill from Fuels America. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and hi, everybody, and welcome to today's call. Thanks for joining. I have a couple of experts here on the line to discuss the study that RFA has released today about RINs. So with me, we have Jeff Cooper, who's Vice President of Research and Analysis at RFA, Scott Richman, who's a Senior Vice President at Informa Economics, and Crystal Carpenter, a Senior Consultant at Informa Economics. All three are here today to talk about the study that should be hitting your inboxes right about now. So at this point, I'll hand the call over to Jeff Cooper to deliver his remarks. Go ahead, Jeff.
All right. Well, thank you, Ann, and good afternoon, and thanks, everyone, for joining us. As you all know, there's been a lot of rhetoric, a lot of hysteria in recent weeks regarding the temporary spike in ethanol RIN prices. Some oil companies and the associations representing the oil industry have outrageously suggested that RINs are adding as much as 10 cents per gallon to the retail price of gasoline or $13 billion in aggregate. And unfortunately, some media outlets have irresponsibly repeated those numbers in headlines and in articles without bothering to check the math or see if those figures really pass the common sense test. So in an effort to cut through the rhetoric and inject some facts and some logic and some data into this debate over RINs, the Renewable Fuels Association commissioned Informa Economics to conduct an independent economic analysis of the impact of RINs on gasoline prices in 2013. So we'll get to the results of that study in a moment, but I first wanted to offer a few related thoughts on the subject and maybe do a bit of RINs 101. Just to hopefully clear up some of the confusion that we continue to see out there in this, in terms of the discussion on RINs. Just to review, RINs are the serial numbers, the 38-digit serial number that are used by obligated parties who are typically refiners and importers to demonstrate compliance with the renewable fuel standard. A RIN is generated each time a gallon of renewable fuel is produced, and that RIN essentially tracks the gallon all the way through the supply chain. So there still seems to be a lot of misunderstanding about how an obligated party obtains a RIN. And the simple explanation is that a refiner or importer receives the RIN when they purchase the gallon of renewable fuel. So today, in the case of corn ethanol, an obligated party can buy that gallon of ethanol in Chicago for $2.50, and that price includes the RIN. So they get the gallon of ethanol and the RIN for a price that's about 45 or 50 cents less than the price of a gallon of gasoline at the wholesale level. So this is how the overwhelming majority of RINs are obtained by the oil companies, who then submit those RINs to EPA to show compliance. So when we see these RIN prices quoted at 80 cents or 65 cents, that's the price for a RIN that has been separated from the gallon of renewable fuel. And that separation occurs when the obligated party places the gallon of renewable fuel into retail. So if an oil company blends more renewable fuel than they are required to by the RFS, they end up holding surplus RINs. And they can bank those RINs and save them for compliance with the RFS in the future, or sell them to another obligated party who may not have blended enough physical product to meet their obligation. So the trade of these detached RINs is extremely thin. And I need to point out that it also involves speculators. At the request of the oil industry, EPA allowed third parties with no blending obligation to participate in the RIN trading market. And, you know, we believe that much of the volatility we've seen in recent weeks can be explained, at least in part, by speculative activity. But before I turn it over to Scott, I just have a few more quick points for context that I want to make. You know, we keep reading and hearing about $1 RINs or RINs at a record price of $1.06 or $1.10 or whatever the case may be. The fact is, separated RINs have traded for over a dollar only 2 days out of the 59 trading days so far this year. And again, we have no idea how many trades were actually done at that price, at that, you know, $1 level. Yesterday's RIN price was 63 cents. And the average this year has been 39 cents. So we're asking requesting that people stop writing and talking about $1 RINs. It just isn't, it isn't an accurate portrayal of what's happening in that market right now. And then the other point I wanted to make is, you know, if you look at retail gas prices, you know, if you overlay retail gas prices on RIN prices, what you see very clearly is that gas prices jumped long before RIN prices began to increase. And in fact, retail gas prices peaked in late February and were on their way down when RIN prices really began to escalate and spiked in March. So to suggest that RINs were driving retail gas prices higher this spring is just not truthful. And it's pretty easy to debunk that if you just sit down and look at the prices of the two. So with that, I want to turn it over to this time at Scott Richmond, who again is the Senior Vice President of Consulting for Inform Economics, and Scott is going to walk us through the analysis.
Well, thanks, Jeff, and good afternoon to everyone. I do appreciate the opportunity to speak to you all this afternoon. I'm going to say just a very brief word about Informa Economics, and it's not for promotional purposes. It's just to establish our credentials. We do outside third-party objective work, a lot of work on commodity market analysis, a lot of consulting work, and we serve the agricultural, food, renewable fuels, and conventional energy and transportation sectors. We have dedicated analysts who look after those sectors. Personally, I've been doing consulting work related to ethanol for over 20 years, so this is not something that I've come to lately. We have done consulting work related to ethanol for renewable fuels companies, for agricultural companies, as you might expect. We've also done renewable fuels work, specifically ethanol work, for refiners and obligated parties. We've done it for government agencies like the USDA, as well as trade associations. My colleague Crystal Carpenter has been with Informa for 6 or 7 years and has been doing in-depth ethanol-related work ever since coming here, along with certain work in graduate school. As Jeff mentioned, the white paper was commissioned by the Renewable Fuels Association, but the contents of it were not in any way dictated by the Renewable Fuels Association. It was developed independently, and my comments today were developed completely independently as well. So with that preface, let me go ahead and talk about the content of the analysis. And what we were really setting out to do is to take a look at what's been going on this year and give a fact-based assessment, let the facts fall where they may, let the results fall where they may, regarding what's been going on with RIN prices and what, if any, effect that's been having on retail gasoline prices, which we all go to the pump and we know are a bit elevated right now. And so it's a natural question, what's driving that? The bottom line finding from Informa Economics' work is that the renewable fuel standard in general and the functioning of the renewable identification number, or RIN system in particular, has not been a significant factor in the rise in retail gasoline prices in 2013. That's the bottom line conclusion from everything. But to address this issue, we looked at it from three different analytic vantage points, and I'll go through each of the three of those. The first was an analysis of the pattern of gasoline prices and the gasoline crack spread, which is basically the margin to refiners from processing crude oil into gasoline, along with other products, thus far in 2013, and looking at it in its recent historical context. The second thing that we did was a detailed set of calculations regarding the number of RINs that obligated parties might need to purchase on the open market under the renewable fuel standard and how this might flow through to retail gasoline prices. And then the third vantage point was a very brief analysis of what's been going on with ethanol prices relative to RIN prices. As Jeff Cooper mentioned, when a refiner or another obligated party or an independent blender goes ahead and purchases ethanol and separates that upon purchase or blending, what happens is that there is a, in almost all occasions, there is a RIN attached to that gallon of ethanol, and so they get to separate that RIN. That RIN then has value either for obligated parties in compliance or can be traded on the open market. So given that the prices that are reported for ethanol have a RIN attached, it's instructive to take a look at what's been going on with the prices of ethanol relative to what's been going on with the reported open market prices of RINs. So let me first discuss the results of the fuel market analysis. And I guess first and foremost, it's important to recognize that gasoline and the gasoline crack spreads exhibit a distinct seasonal pattern. This is Exhibit 1 in the white paper that that has been distributed. If you take a look at that exhibit, you can tell that gasoline prices slump during the fourth quarter of the calendar year, particularly November and December, and then strengthen considerably in the first quarter, the following quarter of the calendar year, and stay high through the summertime driving season. That's been a pattern throughout time. What we did was we focused on the period since the beginning of 2011. There is somewhat an analogous pattern in 2010 as well. We did not go back to 2008 and 2009 because there were tremendous gyrations in the petroleum market as a result of the recession and financial crisis that came in, and so that's not really an analogous time period. But looking at the period starting in 2011, where you've got the recovery from the Great Recession, and additionally, it's the period after which, largely because of production from shale oil, there has been a divergence between U.S. benchmark crude oil prices and international benchmark crude oil prices. If you look at that period, there has, in the first quarter of each of these 3 years, there has been a relatively similar increase in gasoline prices and the crack spread, and the level of the crack spread right now is highly consistent with similar times of the year for 2011 and 2012. That's the first main point. However, if you look back at 2011 and 2012, the price of conventional ethanol RINs, which are also referred to as in the trade as D6 RIN prices, averaged 3 cents a gallon in the first quarter of 2011 and 2 cents a gallon in the first quarter of 2012. So clearly RINs were not driving the increases in either of those times. And the increase in the crack spread and gasoline prices in the first quarter of this year, again, has been consistent with what happened during those times. So it's a little bit hard from a historical standpoint to say that RIN prices are driving up gasoline prices and crack spreads in the first quarter of each year. One thing to note is that in a February 21st article by U.S. Energy Information Administration about the rise in gasoline prices, they did not mention renewable fuels. They did not mention RINs. They did, however, suggest that about two-thirds of the rise in gasoline prices that had occurred to date were due to higher gasoline crack spreads and the increase in crude oil prices that had taken place. And they did cite several other reasons for the spike in prices. They mentioned what are seasonal outages for refinery maintenance, preparations for the switch to summer grade gasoline, and then some global product demand issues as well. So that's a recap of the fuel market analysis. I'd like to move on now to looking at what we did in terms of trying to calculate if you took a look at RIN prices, not just market price patterns, and tried to see how those might flow through to retail gasoline prices, we constructed a detailed set of calculations. And one critical issue I might mention, sometimes missed by the media and some of the stories I've seen about the gyrations in RIN prices that have occurred in 2013 and the rise in gasoline prices, is that really only a small minority of the RINs that are needed for compliance with the renewable fuel standard have to be purchased on the open market. A pretty substantial majority of the RINs that are that obligated parties obtain, they either obtain through purchase and blending of ethanol that they themselves do, or indirectly through contractual arrangements with parties that they sell blend stock gasoline to. So we're really only talking about a relatively small part of the market. What we did was we took a look at a reference case and then a high case, and I believe that the reference case is a bit more representative of what's gone on year to date. We estimate that about 2.1 billion conventional ethanol or D6 RINs were in inventories at the end of 2012. That's less than the EPA had estimated in their proposed rulemaking for the renewable volume obligations, but that's where Informa sees things right now. We estimate that about 85% were at that time held by obligated parties. According to research that we've done prior to conducting this white paper, we believe that somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 to 85% of RINs that are attached to ethanol that's bought and sold during the course of the year is either directly captive to refineries and other obligated parties through purchase and blending, or again is indirectly controlled by them and obtained by them through contractual agreements. So really only it's likely that an even smaller minority of RINs are still held by independent third parties at the end of the year. It would be more likely that the independent marketers and blenders would go ahead and monetize those and sell them to the obligated parties. So we assume that 85% of RINs in inventories that have been banked at the end of the year are held by obligated parties. This means that about 1.8 billion D6 RINs would have been held by obligated parties at the end of 2012 and carried over and can be applied to applied for compliance in 2013. Informa forecasts that about 12.9 billion gallons of ethanol are going to be produced in the United States in calendar 2013. After adjustments, we believe that about 12.5 billion gallons of domestically produced grain-based alcohol are going to be consumed in the United States this year. That's excluding about 600 million gallons of consumption that we estimate for imported Brazilian origin sugarcane-based ethanol. Again, assuming that 85% of RINs are separated or otherwise controlled by the obligated parties, what that basically means is that compared to an effective allocation of 13.8 billion gallons for corn-based ethanol, obligated parties would have to purchase about 1.4 billion RINs on the open market. So that's about 10%, 1.4 billion RINs compared to a 13.8 billion gallon or equivalent RIN mandate for corn-based ethanol. They only need to buy in about 1.4 billion RINs on the open market. If you take a look at what the open market price of RINs has been to date, It's about 37 cents per RIN for D6 RINs. So the aggregate cost of open market purchases by obligated parties would be about $530 million. If you take that on a per gallon of gasoline sold basis, and you assume that 100% of the costs are passed through, which is probably an overstatement, but there aren't good statistics on that, that equates to about 0.4 cents per gallon of gasoline that's purchased in the United States. You have to also net that against, in order to see the big picture, you also have to net that against what sort of benefit are consumers getting from the use of ethanol in conjunction with the renewable fuel standard. What we did was take a look at the on an apples-to-apples basis at the price of ethanol relative to the price of gasoline. Ethanol year-to-date has been about on about a 44-cent per gallon discount for physical ethanol versus gasoline. That translates to on 12.5 billion gallons of consumption of domestically produced ethanol. That translates to a $5.5 billion net benefit to consumers from using, aggregate gross benefit to consumers from using ethanol. If that's completely passed through to consumers, that translates to about 4 cents per gallon. And if you go ahead and net that, you take the 4 cent benefit and you net the 0.4 cent cost that could be attributed to RINs, that's still about just under a 4 cent per gallon benefit to consumers at the retail level. We also did a high case where we took several conservative assumptions, and we looked specifically, number one, at RIN prices that have occurred month to date, because the RIN prices that have occurred in March have been far and away well greater than anything experienced since RINs began trading a few years back. Generally, RINs are maybe around 3 cents, or at least in single digits. For this past month, we took an open market price of about 79 cents. We also had a much more conservative look at the percentages of RINs that are held by or otherwise controlled by obligated parties. And even in this case, what we came out to is that on a per gallon basis, the direct cost of RINs would be about 2 cents per gallon. However, you still get that 4 cent per gallon benefit because of the lower price of ethanol, and that translates to about a 2 cent per gallon net benefit to consumers. I would suggest that the reference case, in our view, is more representative of the reality that's existed in 2013. We only put in the high case because it's somewhat of a logical extreme, and we wanted to answer so that there wouldn't be any confusion that we were simply going with a more favorable point of view. We also wanted to take a higher case to show what would happen as a result of the higher RIN prices, even in something that is a little bit more on the extreme side of things. One final note, and then we will go ahead and open up things to for questions, is, as was mentioned at the outset, refiners and other obligated parties can get RINs, D6 conventional ethanol RINs, two different ways. They can get them through blending, the blending of ethanol that has the RINs attached that are generated at the ethanol production facility, or similarly through contractual arrangements with blenders, or else they can purchase the RINs on the open market. As was mentioned in a reference case, the open market might represent somewhere in the neighborhood of about 10% of the RINs that the obligated parties will need in 2013. There are different quotes that are put into the white paper about the thinness of this market. But one thing is, if you take a look, and this was done on weekly average RIN prices and weekly average Chicago spot ethanol prices. If you take a look at the time that we, we finalized this analysis. The 2013 year-to-date ethanol price increase had been about 19 cents per gallon. About 11 cents of that can be said to have been caused by increases in corn prices. Corn prices were up about 30 cents per bushel, which is about 11 cents per gallon. So ethanol prices up on a gross basis about 19 cents per gallon. On the other hand, year-to-date, the RIN price increase for open market conventional ethanol RINs had gone up by about 76 cents per gallon. You would expect that if that were the true value of a RIN, then given that a vast majority of the RINs that are going to be obtained by obligated parties are going to be through the purchase and blending of ethanol itself, if this were a true value of the RIN, given that the RIN is attached in the Chicago ethanol spot price that's quoted, you would have expected the value, the price of ethanol, to have gone up considerably more. Now, it is recognized that if you're in a situation, which we really haven't been for most of this year, where you're pressed up against the blend wall, then there should be some additional value for separated RINs versus trading in the open market versus RINs that are attached to ethanol. But that is a very, very small part of the overall needs. And to have a 76-cent increase relative to a 19-cent increase appears considerably out of proportion, and it calls into question whether the 76-cent increase is really representative of the value of RINs out there in comparison. So with that being said, I would that concludes our prepared comments.